earlier this summer, we had a conversation with Tad Johnson. He is the director of the Tribal Sovereignty Institute and also the senior director of American Indian Tribal Nation Relations at the University of Minnesota, Duluth. And we had this conversation with Tad about a landmark decision that was handed down by the Supreme Court, ruling that about half of Oklahoma is Native American land. There has been another ruling in Oklahoma, this time by the EPA, and that may cast this whole tribal sovereignty issue into there's some question about it now, and we brought Tad on once again to have him try to parse this for us and explain what it all means. Hey, Tad, good morning. Nice to have you with us.
Morning, Lisa. Nice to be here.
So just refresh our memory about what the decision this summer, when the Supreme Court ruled that about half of Oklahoma is Native American land, what that meant.
Right. So this was a criminal law case. Some not nice people were involved. The first case was a murder. A Creek Indian killed another Creek on the Muscogee Creek Reservation, and the issue was, do the boundaries of the Creek Reservation still exist for the purposes of major crimes? Meaning, does the guy go to the federal prison or get executed by the state of Oklahoma? The Supreme Court said, well, let's hear this again. So they did it again in a case called McGirt. And McGirt was actually a sexual offender. And again, the question of who has criminal jurisdiction over McGirt or an Indian in Indian, what was Indian country in Oklahoma? And do the reservation boundaries of the Muscogee Creek Reservation still exist under the Major Crimes Act? And the Supreme Court said, yes, actually, the boundaries of the reservation never went away, which kind of means that there's about 30 plus other tribes in Oklahoma, where there are still probably tribal reservation boundaries. And so suddenly there started to be a lot of talk among scholars, tribal and non-tribal, over what this means overall for the future of the state of Oklahoma, the future of tribal sovereignty in Oklahoma. And, you know, it was a very positive case with some beautiful language by Judge Gorsuch. Ironically, and he said at the Trail of Tears there was a promise, and they were promised this land and this reservation. And so it seemed like a pretty clear-cut thing until, you know, people started to parse it, which is where we're at now.
Now, this latest breaking news, actually, we heard about yesterday on Democracy Now! That the Environmental Protection Agency has granted Oklahoma's Environmental Regulatory Agency control over almost all of the tribal lands in Oklahoma, rolling back those sovereign rights for dozens of tribes. So, first of all, can they do that when the Supreme Court said the boundaries still exist? Well, obviously they can do it because they did it. But how was this able to happen, and what does it mean going forward?
Well, actually, interestingly enough, I don't know if you or your listeners know of Senator James Inhofe. He is the gentleman from Oklahoma who in 2000 once brought in a snowball into the Senate to demonstrate that there was no such thing as global warming. In 2005, he had a big highway bill that was going through, and just for the heck of it, he stuck onto the highway bill that, you know, if tribes attempt to assume environmental jurisdiction in Oklahoma, it's pretty much up to the state, and the state can shut it down if they want, and the feds are kind of precluded the feds from allowing for tribal jurisdiction over the environment. And so they dug up that old law, the 15-year-old law, I guess it's not that old, and basically said, hey, look at this. The tribes can't have environmental jurisdiction. Now, on other reservations in the United States, the Congress in the past, especially during the 1980s, passed a whole bunch of laws allowing for tribes to take jurisdiction over their environmental matters under the aegis of the Clean Water Act, the Safe Drinking Water Act, and the Clean Air Act. So tribes can claim a status called treatment as a state, and so it gives them the functional equivalent of the jurisdiction of a state under the EPA statutes. And so there's a whole bunch of things that tribes can do at this point. They can attempt to appeal if, for example, a new administration were to come in. They might be looking to roll back Senator Inhofe's little addendum he put onto his highway bill on EPA jurisdiction. And right now, this is just the beginning, I think, of what Oklahoma congressmen and senators are going to start doing with Oklahoma tribes. One thing to keep in mind with Indian tribes is, in spite of the fact there are treaties, in 1903, the Supreme Court heard a case called Lone Wolf versus Hitchcock. And it's kind of a complex case. The bottom line was, though, there was a treaty, and under the treaty, the tribes were supposed to hang on to their land forever. Congress subsequently passed an act against the tribes' will, giving away a whole bunch of their reservation. And Lone Wolf was a tribal leader. Hitchcock was a Secretary of Interior. The question goes up to the Supreme Court in 1903, can Congress roll back a treaty? Can Congress unilaterally abrogate a treaty? And the U.S. Supreme Court said, yes, they can, because Congress has plenary power over Indian tribes. So Congress can go in and roll back treaty rights. And Congress, when I was working for the House during the 90s, we actually overturned two Supreme Court cases for the good of Indian tribes. We returned criminal jurisdiction to all Indians that live on a reservation. There was a screwy case that came down, and another one having to do with religious freedom. But we reversed both of those to give jurisdiction back to the tribes. If, for example, there's a Democratic House, Senate, and executive branch, a lot of things can be done in a positive way for tribes. That's not to say the Oklahoma delegation isn't going to try to push to overturn the GERT and take away as much jurisdiction as they can, but the EPA jurisdiction is of particular sensitivity to the tribes, because there's a lot of things, like in Oklahoma, like fracking, slaughtering hogs. And, I mean, that stuff goes on all over, but now it's going to be within the boundaries of a reservation. What frequently happens when tribes get back their environmental jurisdiction is they'll pass rules that are more stringent than the state. And Oklahoma, I think, wants to keep its rather laissez-faire, shall we say, rules on the environment. And so This is a ruling. I'm guessing it will be widely discussed in Congress. It's not a Supreme Court ruling. It's an interpretation of an act of Congress that passed 15 years ago. And acts of Congress can be changed, amended. But I think you can look for the Oklahoma delegation to be trying to find ways to roll back McGirt. And if Trump happens to get reelected, the Trump administration was against the tribes in the McGirt case. So, that would be bad all around. So, anyway, long story short, this is the beginning of a long saga of, for each tribal victory, it seems like we have to take two steps back, because suddenly it's always a battle between states and tribes. And so the tribe won round one. Now the states are coming back with their congressional delegations, their governor, I'm guessing their industries, and will lobby hard to take away any jurisdiction the tribes just picked up.
Ted, I'm curious about how, and of course it's early days because this decision was just made this week, and so it is early days, but we are seeing across our country groups of minority people, people of color, saying, you know, we're fed up with this. We're fed up with the systemic racism. We're fed up with a system that has been hardwired so that in many instances we keep ending up with the short end of the stick. Do you see that perhaps in Indian country there may also be a heightened sense of, okay, we're done putting up with this now?
Yeah. I think it's a moment in history. I guess it's, out of a tragedy like George Floyd and then the riots that followed, a lot of people are comparing 2020 to 1968 when Vietnam was going on, protests at the Democratic National Convention, Martin Luther King and Bobby Kennedy were assassinated, and the country was in tremendous turmoil. In 2020, we've got our own laundry list of things that have gone wrong. But after that, institutions started changing with regard to accepting more minorities into colleges, you know, trying to improve the lot of the poor and the marginalized, and yeah, this is a moment when the black community, the American Indian community, all folks that are different. I think there's you know, people are terrified about what's going to happen next on the Supreme Court, and it's a moment of incredible. People are frightened at the, you know, marginalized people are frightened, but at the same time, it's a great moment in history where the white population sort of saying, looking around and saying, wait a second, maybe we've made a few mistakes here. Maybe we should take a step back and take a look. And with COVID-19 going on, I think a lot of people are sitting indoors thinking about contemplating life and maybe how the world could be if we took a little more time out to look at social justice issues. And that's what I hope is going on. And it seems to be going on at the University of Minnesota. The tribes just passed a series of resolutions asking the University of Minnesota to change. They wanted an ongoing dialogue with the president of the university. They wanted a lot of the past wrongs of the university to be at least written out, in, and so that they want a report that's written by both tribes and the university as to what happened with land, everything from land grant to medical experiments to experiments on wild rice. And we want to get together, and Daniel Patrick Monahan said we can, you know, each have our own opinions, but we're not entitled to our own facts. And so what the tribes want to do is establish what happened in the past with the University of Minnesota, which will allow us to go forward. So to me, that's a sign of hope. So in my little corner of the world, it's, I see some hope, some glimmers of hope out there.
Ted, thank you so very much for taking some time to parse this for us, to kind of explain the ins and outs where we could perhaps have gotten lost in the legal language, and always, of course, words of hope. Words of hope these days, we'll take them anywhere we can get them. Thanks so much for being our guest, Ted.
Thanks, Lisa. Have a good day.
Tad Johnson is our guest this morning here on KUMD. He is the Senior Director of the American Indian Tribal Nations Relations Program at the university, and he's the Director of the Tribal Sovereignty Institute. Journey to Wellness in Indian Country is made possible by the University of Minnesota Medical School Duluth Campus, serving the needs of rural Minnesota and Native American communities.